Sick cruise ships seek shelter in South Florida, plus the coronavirus and construction. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Today, two big industries important to South Florida and COVID-19. First, the cruise ship industry. Two ships with more than a dozen people combined suffering from the coronavirus on board docked Thursday at Port Everglades in Fort Lauderdale. More ships with more people on board suffering from COVID-19 are offshore in the Atlantic hoping to come into port. So how is Broward County dealing with sick passengers and crew coming ashore? Plus, a call by a big home builder to shut down construction sites. But building continues, even by the construction chief who called for sites to close. Safety and compliance inspections in some areas have been suspended, yet the building continues. So what precautions are builders taking? Your phone calls coming up on the South Florida Roundup, made possible by Willie the Bee Man, bee removal specialist.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The coronavirus pandemic has triggered the biggest spike in unemployment in more than four decades in this country. But as NPR Scott Horsley reports, even that doesn't tell the full story.
A monthly report from the Labor Department says unemployment jumped to 4.4% in March, and that was before the most sweeping stay-at-home orders were issued in an effort to control the virus. Since then, another 10 million people have filed initial claims for unemployment. White House Economic Advisor Larry Kudlow acknowledges there's no sugarcoating the cost of this pandemic.
It's going to get worse in the weeks ahead. There's no question about it.
March was the first month in nearly 10 years in which the U.S. suffered a net loss of jobs. Bars and restaurants took a heavy hit, but almost every industry was affected. That even includes healthcare, as many doctors and dentists closed their offices to all but emergency patients. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Friction between many states and the federal government is stretching into another day of this pandemic, with many governors vexed that their states are still in bidding wars against each other for personal protective equipment and other medical supplies. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has been perhaps the most vocal for weeks.
It is unbelievable to me that in New York State, in the United States of America, we can't make these materials and that we are all shopping China to try to get these materials, and we're all competing against each other.
Cuomo offered to pay New York-based companies who agree to manufacture personal protective gear. Many fashion designers have begun to make masks and gowns. New York City is the epicenter of the U.S. coronavirus outbreak. Now to Ecuador, which is experiencing one of South America's largest outbreaks of COVID-19. John Otis tells us one coastal city is reporting more than 3,100 confirmed cases and, of course, many deaths.
Hospitals in Guayaquil are overwhelmed, while a curfew has hindered the work of ambulance drivers and undertakers. So the bodies of people who have died of COVID-19 and other illnesses often lie for days, watched over by relatives. Kayla Reyes, whose cousin died at home, moved his body to the sidewalk due to the growing stench. He's been dead for 4 days, she says. We've been calling the police, but no one comes. President Lenin Moreno says up to 3,500 people in Guayaquil could die of COVID-19. He has sent a task force to the city to collect the bodies and has pledged to build a special cemetery to hold them. For NPR News, I'm John Otis.
At last check on Wall Street, the Dow was down 386 points, 1.8%, at 21,026. You're listening to NPR News.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone.
Bill Withers, whose first single, Ain't No Sunshine, went to number 3 on the Billboard Hot 100, has died, according to his official Facebook page. Withers followed that hit with another, Lean On Me, which went to number 1 in 1972. He passed away Monday of heart complications at the age of 81. The UN Secretary General says there should be only one fight in the world today, a shared battle against COVID-19. He's been calling on warring parties in conflicts around the globe to lay down their arms. We have this story from NPR's Michelle Kellerman.
Secretary General Antonio Guterres says in some places there's been no let-up in fighting despite his calls for a global ceasefire. Some conflicts have intensified. He points to Yemen and Libya and says while a ceasefire in northeast Syria is holding, the fighting needs to stop across the country.
The COVID-19 storm is now coming to all these theaters of conflict. The virus has shown how swiftly it can move across borders, devastate countries, and upend lives. The worst is yet to come.
He's urging countries with influence on various conflicts to use it. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Washington.
U.S. stocks are trading lower, with the Dow down 1.7% or 380 points at 21,046. The Nasdaq has fallen more than 1.5%. The S&P 500 is also down 1.6%. I'm Lakshmi Singh, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include C3.ai. C3.ai's software enables organizations to use artificial intelligence at enterprise scale, solving previously unsolvable business problems. Learn more at C3.ai.
During this extraordinary global pandemic, WLRN is committed to be your go-to destination for relevant and timely national and local updates. As this crisis has changed all of our lives, it's changed our newsroom, too. We're taking every precaution to keep our journalists and staff as safe as possible, while also fulfilling our mission of informing you. We're here when you need us because of all the members who have been there for us. Thank you for listening, and thank you for supporting this essential public service. Donate at WLRN.org.
Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week and supporting public radio. Passengers and crew members on cruise ships are especially vulnerable during this coronavirus pandemic. We've seen that from the earliest days. There have been cases in California and Japan where ships have had to sit offshore until health officials could figure out a plan for treating sick passengers and crew. This week, Broward County responded to two Holland American cruise ships. They had combined more than a dozen people suffering from COVID-19. During a news conference on Thursday, Governor Ron DeSantis talked about the issue.
Just so people understand, there's probably 25 of these ships out there. Two of them, these two, you know, have U.S. citizens on board. I think the Zaandam has, you know, 40, 50 Floridians. So I think we have an interest in making sure those folks come safely.
The Zaandam and the Rotterdam are the two ships from Holland America that docked Thursday afternoon, finally, at Port Everglades in Fort Lauderdale. Were you one of those passengers? Have you been on one of these passengers over the past couple of weeks of cruise ships come into port? What does it feel like to be back home? Maybe you're a worker at the port or with a cruise ship company. Tell us and share your experiences with us here on the South Florida Roundup. Phone lines are open right now, 800-743-WLRN. Toll-free phone number, 800-743-WLRN. That's 9576. WLRN's Broward County reporter Katie Swatowski is here back on the Roundup. Katie, what's the latest on the cruise ships that came in Thursday to Port Everglades?
Hi, Tom. So the cruise ships were allowed to dock and ambulances were waiting to take the most critical patients to Broward Health. And the hospital responded this morning saying they did accept the patients, they are treating them, and that, quote, some of them are in fair condition and some of them are in critical condition. So there are some passengers on board that were deemed not fit to travel per the CDC guidelines, and they have stayed on board as well as the crew.
What does that mean, not fit to travel? What are those guidelines that we know about?
Those are some folks experiencing symptoms still, some influenza-like symptoms, cough, fever. They're not super sick. They're considered more mild symptoms, but not ready to travel yet.
And may or may not have been tested for the virus yet?
May or may not have been tested. And so they remain on board with the crew. The people, there was about 1,200 people that were categorized as asymptomatic or fit to travel. And they are on their way to the tarmac in coaches that the Carnival Corporation has gotten for them. And they're being put on chartered flights back to their home countries.
So they're not London, flying commercially. Canada. Yeah, they're not flying commercial flights. Okay, great. Stick with us, Katie. Let's bring in Broward County Commissioner Michael Udine. Commissioner Udine, welcome back to WLRN. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks so much. Good afternoon.
Walk us through the decision to allow these cruise ships to dock at Port Everglades. This was quite a debate over the past couple of weeks, especially as the Zaandam ship was in the Pacific and then made its way through the Panama Canal and up through the Gulf of Mexico and the Caribbean Sea, of course, as we were watching this day by day, and you and your commissioners were debating how to treat it.
Yeah, well, this is something that, you know, was a major dilemma for Broward County. At first, the ship was not granted passage through the Panama Canal, and at that point, at some point, that change in the Panama Canal let them through, and the ship was headed for Broward County. You know, along the way, it passed many countries that could have provided aid or could have provided medical assistance to the passengers on board, but they were denied entry to virtually every port of call along the way. It became clear that Broward County and Port Everglades was theoretically their only port left because everyone else had rejected where this ship was going to be allowed to dock. So our unified command, which consists of the Broward Sheriff, County Administration, Port Administration, the Coast Guard, Florida Department of Health, and other professionals, began reviewing this a few days ago, working with the ship owner, Carnival, to come up with a plan that would be satisfactory. Now, originally, the first plan was not satisfactory, and it went through numerous iterations of getting to a plan that everybody at Unified Command could sign off on.
Before we get to the result of that, Commissioner, where did those first initial plans come up short?
Well, I think some of them were like they were gonna pull in, and people were gonna get out and take their own cars home. You know, people go on regular commercial flights; they would be sent to the air, you know, without the appropriate supervision and monitoring, and that was something that our unified command would not sign off on.
Yeah.
So, if you see what's going on now, as there's a full operational plan that's been put in effect by the Broward Sheriff's Office, where they're being taken on, sterilized buses right to the tarmac. They're not even going through the airport. They're being put right on charter planes and being chartered out. Those are the asymptomatic ones, and the local asymptomatic ones were being, driven home by Carnival personnel or by special personnel that could get them into their houses so that they can comply with, CDC isolation mm-hmm. requirements for the necessary number of days to isolate.
Commissioner, was there reluctance on the part of some agencies to provide that kind of level of transportation?
Yesterday even, there was not sign-off by Unified Command on how this was going to happen. And until that was signed off on, I don't think, Unified Command requires a unanimous vote of all the different disciplines that are involved. And it took them a while to get there. They did get there. The ship owner was paying all the costs for all this, but this needed to be done in a safe and secure manner for the protection of the residents of Broward County and the port personnel and the personnel that would be transporting them.
Yeah. Commissioner Udine, stick with us here. Katie Swetalski, these are not the first ships that Broward County has had to debate in terms of how to deal with sick passengers and crew. How has this debate evolved in a relatively short period of time, 3-4 weeks now, that Port Everglades has been kind of wrestling with the COVID-19 and the cruise ship industry?
And Port Everglades was the site of our very first cases in Broward County. That's where our first four cases were connected. And so I think there's always been a level of watching the port, but I think that the port has really wanted to try to stay open and maintain trade as much as possible. I mean, nobody wants to shut off your produce and gasoline coming into the county. But it's certainly been a question, as you said, for several weeks. And one of the things that I think that's really interesting is that the port is going to have to keep dealing with this. There's the Coral Princess that I believe is also owned by Carnival. They have 12, 13 confirmed cases of COVID on board. And they're also hoping to come to Port Everglades. So this is a question that's going to keep coming up and keep coming back. And I think one of the questions for the Broward County Commission that was pretty heavily debated at the last meeting they had when they heard from Unified Command and they heard from the CDC, the question was, why is this left to the county to figure out how to coordinate all of this and get these people home? I think the question of federal involvement and state involvement was certainly, why was it left to the county?
There are a number of ships still offshore waiting to come to port, looking for a shelter, so to speak, here. Perhaps listeners may have family members or know friends or neighbors on those ships. 800-743-9576. Are you a port worker? Have you seen this kind of response today, on Thursday, yesterday, as the two Holland American ships came in? 800-743-9576. 9576. Katie Swotalski is with us, Broward County reporter here at WLRN, and Broward County Commissioner Michael Uding. Commissioner Uding, what about those other ships? And is there now protocol in place for Port Everglades and Broward County to deal with these additional cruise ships that are awaiting safe passage into port?
That's an interesting question. I know that there are some other ships out there, and there are probably some other ships that want to head to Port Everglades, and each one of those is going to have to, you know, there. I don't understand, as the reporter just said, and this is something that I brought up, why is this resting solely on local government, on local Broward County, on local sheriff's department? These are humanitarian issues that affect, you know, the world. There are passengers on these ships from all over the world. Why is it just being Broward County the site of all of these incoming vessels? I mean, there's other ports up and down the east coast of the United States.
So, Port Miami certainly is in the neighborhood. There's a port in Palm Beach, Port Canaveral. There is a Navy port in Jacksonville.
Yeah, there's got to be a better way to spread this out so that local systems don't get overloaded. So there are other ships out there. My understanding is they're going to be looked at on a case.
The governor says there's 25 ships out there.
I don't know the exact number, and not all of these ships have passengers on them. Some ships just have crew. I mean, each thing seems to be different. Each issue seems to be different. But, you know, shouldn't there be a protocol that's put in place? Why are we being told one ship at a time? If there isn't, if X number of ships are out there, shouldn't there be a unified plan where why would this be a last minute thing when it becomes a humanitarian issue and a humanitarian crisis that this gets hurled upon a local government and a local port? We did our part. We just took these two in. The operation is taking days, really, to unload these passengers. They came in yesterday. There are still passengers being unloaded today. And if charter planes aren't ready, it could continue into the night and theoretically into the next day. At what point does it become too much of a burden on one area? And I don't know why they would want to continue to burden this area when we're in the middle of a hot spot in South Florida. There's got to be better ways to do this.
Katie Swotalski, these are some of the things that we heard from Governor DeSantis earlier in the week when he appeared on Fox News Channel talking about how he did not want these ships, these Holland American ships, to come into Broward County to tax the local healthcare facilities. He reversed himself, though, and we have seen, of course, the ships dock and some of the patients come off. What kind of pressure, Katie Swotalski, does this put on hospitals and the bed supply that we've been paying so close attention to over the past several weeks?
So Broward County has a field hospital ready if it needs it. We have not opened that yet. But certainly for these two Holland America ships, I mean, that's 10 to 13 beds at local hospitals. We don't know if the critical patients need ventilators. We don't know how many ventilators are at disposal. Of course, the ability for hospitals to get these really, really highly desired N95 masks is certainly, you know, something that the state is really working on and struggling to acquire. So it's certainly, I mean, is a strain.
800-743-9576. That last voice, Katie Swotalski, covering Broward County for us here at WLRN. Broward County Commissioner Michael Uding is also with us talking about the cruise ship industry and cruise ships with sick passengers and crew members coming into Port Everglades. Two of those ships from Holland America, a Carnival Cruise Line flagship, ships came in on Thursday and have unloaded some passengers. 800-743-WLRN. If you've been in contact, maybe you've had a family member, a friend on one of those ships, or has a family member on a ship still waiting to come into port. In Fort Lauderdale, Kim is on line four. Go ahead, Kim. You're on the radio now.
Hi, I agree with the other caller about there needs to be something in place for if there's 25 other ships. I don't think the county can absorb all of these costs and put at risk the first responders in terms of escorting these people to charter planes or taking people home that are local. And if they're local, I think there should be some kind of other process in place to make sure that these people stay in place for 14 days. not just been taken home and assuming that they're going to shelter in place.
Kim, two interesting points here. Let me put those to Commissioner Udine. First, on that last point, Commissioner, that Kim makes, what kind of enforcement or accountability is in place for some of these passengers who may be coming off these ships, don't necessarily need to go into a hospital, but are being advised to self-isolate for 14 days?
So that's something that I brought up at the commission meeting. Perhaps there was the opportunity of the Carnival, of the cruise company, to maybe get a hotel and put these people in a hotel at their expense to monitor the isolation period. But what I was told is that far exceeds CDC guidelines of what they would need to do. But it's a point that's very well taken. How is there the assurance that they're going to be self-isolating for X number of days? And what assurances is that to the local community? Now, some of these people on these ships have been self-isolating in their cabins for a number of days. So it was a very fluid issue when it came up. But it's an important one that I think is something that needed to be looked at.
You know, speaking of that, Commissioner, do you know how they're exiting the ship? I mean, if folks are not showing symptoms, have been in their cabin for a good number of days, are they essentially knocking on the door individually and having these passengers disembark so that they still recognize the 6-foot social distancing requirement that the CDC has talked about and other public health officials?
There were protocols put in place where they would be, have their temperature taken, different things that would be done. And yeah, they would be recognizing appropriate protocols as they were being let off the ship in much smaller groups. It's not like when you normally get off a cruise ship when there could be a mass of humanity coming off there. It's being monitored in a different way. The thing is that no one really is under an isolation order anywhere. I mean, you can be ordered to isolate, but there's really no way that that's being enforced by anybody. I mean, you can be, if you've come into contact with somebody somewhere, or if you think, then you're supposed to self-isolate, and people are relying on the good faith of people to do that. And that's where it gets tricky on this, when you see all these people that are on the ship that have been in contact with people. They better be doing the self-isolation that's necessary, in fairness to the general public. I agree with the caller. This could have been done in a more stringent requirement, like mandating it, but there was just no appetite for that as it exceeds CDC guidelines.
You'd also have to have the resources, as you mentioned, to kind of require that or mandate it to hold those folks and others accountable. Commissioner.
Well, on the resource part of it, I mean, by the Broward County Commission holding firm in the beginning, we were able to get a lot of these plans, and these iterations of the plans came, and they were, we made the owner of the ship step up to the plate to make sure that, these charter flights and all this stuff is being covered by the ship company, as it should be.
Yeah. You have obviously expressed a lot of reservation. You expressed some initial reservation even about accepting these two ships, but you reverse course. You've expressed reservation right here on the program about why Port Everglades is looked at as a place to accept a number of these ships and why not other ports. The caller, Kim, in Fort Lauderdale also echoed those sentiments. Have you entered into discussions with, say, for instance, the National Guard or some other agency, some other federal agency that could be kind of the local controlling authority?
The port, that would be something that would come out of the port. I mean, it's not a question of...
But the port is a county facility.
Yeah, but it's not a question of reversing positions on this thing. This became a major humanitarian crisis. If there's nowhere for those two ships that just came in to go, we can't leave those ships out to sea forever. So it became a balancing act of what needed to be done versus, what everybody wanted to have done.
Okay. But regarding the other resources, other agencies, what are you exploring? What should the county be exploring? The port is a county facility. It's a Broward County property. If a request to some other agency is to come from the port, that would arguably come from the county. What other considerations are there?
Well, the can handle this. We can have our people handle what needs to be handled, but if there is, but we shouldn't have to be. I mean, we could shut down access to a ship under federal tariff, not let a ship dock at Port Everglades if that was the desire. If a plan is not put in place that Unified Command can sign off on, which includes the Coast Guard, which is a federal agency, then we can deny license to that ship coming in the port. So at all points during these processes, other agencies can be reached out to determine what's in the best interest and how to get people off the ship in the safest way possible. Right now it's being done. Sheriff Tony put in an operational plan. That plan is being adhered to, and people are getting off of these ships. Our local hospitals are in the middle of this whole pandemic, and there are certain requirements on how many people would be allowed to even go to these local hospitals. And after that, the ship would have to medevac in a different way.
Medevac to other regions?
Could be to other places. And I mean, I believe on this agreement with what we have with these two ships that are in, they're limited to 15 hospital beds. So if it goes beyond that, you know, then the cruise company would have to make different arrangements for different, you know, if crew members or anybody that's still on the ship became sick.
So is that 15?
Go to that amount,
Commissioner Udine. Let me ask here: that's 15 hospital beds per hospital in Broward County, or how is that defined?
In total, I mean, we don't have the ability.
So Broward County hospitals, all hospitals under these kind of guidelines, these rules that were put in place for these two ships, will only accept 15 passengers or crew members.
So. Yes, I believe so.
And Katie Swatowski, I believe the reports were 13 combined on the two ships had tested positive.
Or sick. I know there's two confirmed COVID cases of the four deceased people on board. They were taken off the ship last night.
Gotcha. Matt in North Miami on line two. Go ahead, Matt. You're on the radio now.
Hi, how are you? Good afternoon.
Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. I work for Royal Caribbean and actually just signed off of a ship that's floating off the coast of Florida. I got off last Saturday, so I can offer a little bit of a crew member's perspective, how we talk about such things, how we understand such things. Thought you might find it enlightening.
Please do. So first, you got off the ship while it was in port, and then it left?
Right. Our particular ship, I'm being American and having an American passport, and our particular ship didn't have any cases. So we had a scheduled dock that the passengers had already been off for 2 weeks, so we were basically in a 14-day quarantine. So, yeah, we were already...
So let me ask you just a couple of quick questions here, Matt, because there have been questions about screening of crew members as they've gotten off these vessels at the port. Were you screened at all when you left?
We're screening on board every single day. We were all getting our
temperature check. What was screening? Temperature check, okay.
Temperature check and then questionnaires and going through, and we were doing that individually and they were, the doctor was in constant, surveillance of the entire situation. But one of the things I wanted to mention was, as a crew member, sometimes we get a little put off by this idea, and it stands to reason that this happens. I get it. Princess had an issue, and then all of a sudden, every cruise ship becomes, people have this idea it's a petri dish out there. And one of the things we always notice is that airlines that I believe, and most crew members believe, spread more. Never have to take issue or take responsibility for what passengers are passing there, because they get on, they get off, and they go about their merry way. And then they come on a cruise ship, and 2 or 3 days later, they show symptoms of something they got on an airline. So, and then...
I suppose the difference is you're on the airline for 2, 4, 6
right.
hours versus 2, 4, 6 days on a cruise ship.
And I just wanted to say from the perspective I feel, being intimately, have a lot of knowledge with Royal Caribbean, it's just that they handled it so professionally, and they go up so far beyond just being aware of their responsibility when they have passengers on the ship. And in a situation like this, and you know, it goes back to the Norok virus. Remember how that would go around on ships, but most people brought it on board. It doesn't exist in the furniture on the ship. It doesn't exist in the walls on the ship. It takes people bringing it on. And then I think that how each cruise company handles it and the respect with which they handle it, that individual responsibility is very important. I feel like the CDC was taking that into consideration when they were deciding who could dock and who couldn't. It felt like they were. Again, it's a bit above my pay grade, but I just want to offer my perspective. Like, when you're on board the ship, you can be quite frustrated at how ill a passenger will be when they still take a cruise, and you wish they would be a little more discerning,
sure,
deciding on when they would go sit there.
Yeah. No, listen, we experienced this in early March, right? The days before the cruise industry announced it was going to stop cruising for 30 days, we saw some ships and some passengers embark on board. Just a matter of, you know, a few hours before some of those decisions had been made. Matt, we appreciate your sharing your story with us.
Sure,
thanks so much for calling.
It.
Hold on the line for us, would you? If you could hold on there. Matt in North Miami, a Royal Caribbean crew member. Commissioner Udine, what's next for Broward County? As we mentioned, you know, there may be more than 24 ships out in the Atlantic looking for a port of call here. Are you gonna have to have some kind of comprehensive policy or deal with each ship one by one?
You know, I know that Unified Command is looking at this right now. They're looking at these next, this Coral Princess and the other ship that was mentioned earlier. I forget the name of it. And they're going to have to come up with a plan for this. As of now, I'm not even positive that they're requesting to come into Port Everglades. Mm. They were supposed to, but I heard that that's fluid at this time. But at some point, there's going to have to be something, because I don't know if Broward County, I mean, I wouldn't recommend that we take all these ships in. Where is the rest of the nation? There's ports in other areas of the country that should be pitching in here.
Broward County Commissioner Michael Udine. Commissioner Udine, thank you for your time. Broward County reporter at WLR and Katie Swatowski, you get the last word on this. What do we know about the timing of any of these other ships that are floating offshore?
So Coral Princess was supposed to come into Port Everglades on Saturday, and it looks like they're not going to make that Saturday deadline. The ship itself is saying they still want to come to Port Everglades, but that is fluid. We don't know when they're going to arrive now.
Katie Swatowski covering Broward County for us here at WLRN. Always a pleasure, Katie. Thanks for sharing all your reporting with us.
Thanks, Tom.
Still to come, building projects are still running despite the coronavirus shutting down other businesses. The virus and the construction industry is up next as the South Florida Roundup continues.
As we face school closures, many parents are adapting to at-home learning. To assist during this uncertain time, WLRN, in collaboration with Miami-Dade County Public Schools, is here to help by providing educational programming content for pre-K through 12th grade students with our award-winning PBS programs. Students can view these curriculum-related shows weekdays from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. on WLRN-TV. For more information, go to wlrn.org/at-home-learning.
WLRN is your source for timely, reliable information regarding the global coronavirus pandemic and its impact on South Florida. I'm Katie Swatowski.
I'm Alexander Gonzalez. Stay tuned for the latest breaking news throughout the day and head to WLRN.org for updates, answers to frequently asked questions, and information from state health officials.
Stay informed and stay connected at WLRN.org.
Or ask your smart speaker to play WLRN.
We're funded by WLRN members and by Ring by Name Cloud Phone Service, making it possible to work from home, supporting your customers and operations. Service can be set up within one day. Learn more at ringbyname.com.
Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week and supporting public media. You know, many businesses have closed or slowed down considerably to try to slow the spread of the coronavirus. Local governments and the state are allowing some essential services to remain open. That includes grocery stores, pharmacies, pool stores in some cases, other places that are just needed to keep cities and towns and communities, neighborhoods, households running. Here in South Florida, one major industry that has been spared from closing, construction. Building continues. Inspections in some areas, though, have been suspended. So are you in construction? Do you work in construction? Have you seen it in your neighborhood? What are your experiences? Construction and the coronavirus here. How about social distancing on the construction job site? What are those experiences like? 800-743-WLRN. 800-743-9576 is our phone number to join us here on the South Florida Roundup. Sergio Pino is the president and founder of Century Home Builders Group in Miami. He called on the industry to shut down at the same time. He joins us now on the telephone. Sergio, welcome to WLRN. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for inviting us.
You were the first large developer in Miami-Dade County to close a construction site. Two workers tested positive for COVID-19. Why'd you make that call?
Tom, because in my opinion, it was the right thing to do. And not only those two people tested positive in our project, but more and more people are testing positive every single day. This morning, I spoke to all of my subcontractors, and they have people getting tested and people that are tested positive, not only laborers that worked at our projects, but they work in other projects too. And it just doesn't make sense. I never thought I'd be finding myself doing this and speaking to people, trying to convince them that this is not too much to ask to put the industry on hold for 10 working days. And then we'll find out who has it, who doesn't have it, and, you know, we can come back stronger.
But you haven't had much luck convincing your fellow builders, have you?
No, not really. Some small builders who's, you know, spoken to, look, I don't care one way or another. I don't really have a lot of people working on my projects, but this has to come from the large developers, and it also has to come from the mayor and from the governor. At the end of the day, I don't see what is essential about our business.
Sergio, okay. So are you calling for the governor to essentially be explicit and put a moratorium on private construction in Florida?
Totally. For 10 days, 10 working days. That's what they're asking for. 14 days is the time that you need to know if you're okay, if you have it, if you don't have it, and everybody else is close. This doesn't make any sense. Half an hour ago, we just found out that the sales manager who we buy doors from got the virus. Mm. Now the whole office where he works at, they have to close, they have to go home, it doesn't make sense. They have to go test it. This is not going to work. Yesterday we woke up in Florida with 8,000 people tested positive to the virus.
Yeah.
When we go to sleep tonight, it's going to be 10,000.
Sergio Pino is with us, president and founder of Century Home Builders Group, a large real estate development company based in Miami. He has called for, you just heard him, call for a statewide moratorium on private construction. The Miami-Dade County Mayor Carlos Jimenez said construction sites should stay open because it keeps people from being unemployed. This is what the mayor said during an online news conference this week.
Also, once we recover from this, we need to have, you know, construction continue. I mean, right across the street, there's a construction site from my house. They're practicing social distancing. They can do it. As long as you can do that safely, I think that that's something we want to continue to have.
The vice president of business development for a real estate company called Florida East Coast Industries and the head of the South Florida Builders Association, Jose Gonzalez, is back with us here on the Roundup. Jose, welcome back. Nice to have you, sir.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having us here.
So you just heard Sergio Pino essentially say he would support a statewide 10-day moratorium on private construction. The mayor of Miami-Dade County says as long as the workers are 6 feet apart, everything's fine. How about it from the South Florida Builders Association?
And so, Tom, from our standpoint, we have been working with our elected officials and everybody in the chain of command from the CDC down, receiving those guidelines. I mean, Homeland Security was one that deemed construction nationwide as an essential industry. And it's because construction touches every aspect of and every facet of our lives, whether it's from preparing homes for people who are now were going to buy a new house and move out and have sold their old house and are living with their in-laws and they're in cramped quarters, to hospitals who need beds urgently, to industrial buildings that are preparing for companies that manufacture, do logistics, that essentially supply our community. Construction has a hand in all of that. And basically what we've done is we've merged with our other associations, with AGC, ABC, LABA, and the LBA.
Those are other construction trade
groups.
These
are all construction trade groups.
Operate in South Florida as well as nationally.
Yes, and at the state level, and we've gone ahead and created a pledge, first of all, and taking that from the protocols that were given by those health experts.
Tell us what the pledge is.
And basically, the pledge talks about practicing safe social distancing, which is the key thing we keep hearing from all the professionals, and how you do that on job sites.
How do you do that on job sites, right? I mean, some of this equipment and heavy gear, you got to have a couple of workers sometimes very close together.
Yeah, and so there's different ways of achieving that. When you have larger sites, you're spread out a little more. That's a little easier. In the urban sites, it becomes a little more challenging. But what you do is you reduce the crews. You don't allow crews to all work together at the same time. And sometimes you do have to have a two-person a job that's being done, whether you're carrying a large piece of material. Mm-hmm. Then you give them personal protection equipment. I mean, job sites are used to following a lot of rules.
So like masks and face shields, that kind of thing?
All those things are in being done. Additionally, there are builders that have taken additional protocols, like taking the temperatures of employees. They control it. They basically are taking the temperature at a job site, especially if you're working indoors.
Yeah.
They're taking the temperatures. Related, I know, is doing that at some of their job sites. You also look at and having an enforcer. You have a safety officer in most of these larger sites, and that safety officer is going around basically making sure that social distancing is being practiced. Predominantly, normally when you're having lunch is typically one of the times where everybody kind of sits together.
Sure.
And that's where that becomes a lot of important. We've taken some of the lunch trucks off of the site so that people don't touch the food or touch the lunch truck.
Okay.
We've also staggered lunch times for them to be able to have enough space for everybody to be on the site and properly have lunch. And some are just brown bagging it. And so the more time has gone by, and this is not anything new. We've been doing this for the last 2 weeks. We've been working actively to make sure that job sites don't have an issue.
Jose, and hold on the line here. Jose Gonzalez with South Florida Builders Association. Sergio Pino is also along with us. Sergio, I want you to hold as well. He's with the president and founder of Century Home Builders Group. Sergio earlier called for a 10-day moratorium on private construction. I want to get a phone call in here from Palm Beach County. Mark is on line 3. Go ahead, Mark. You're on the radio now.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Doing well. Thanks for calling in. You okay?
Yeah. We're doing well. I'm an inspector. I work within the county. We go to a lot of sites, from small projects and homes up to the high rises at the building here. But as an inspector, we look at it, it's like, wow, we're not very protected, because we'll go out there, we have to handle the permit packages, the ladders. You know, if we're looking at windows, we have to handle all those things, open them, close them. So then we leave, and it's like, oh, what do we do now? Because we don't have any PPE. So we've been getting together and trying to, like, bring soap, bring jugs of water so we can wash up, and bring our own products like sanitizing wipes so we can wipe our vehicles down. But we also see this with the workers. A lot of the sites are working right on top of one another.
Seeing the construction workers closer than 6 feet apart.
Oh yeah. I mean, their shoulders are touching.
By necessity?
Building things. Well, one person's holding something, a building cabinet on site or whatever, you know, they're working on.
And do they have any masks on themselves?
Sometimes. Mostly, I don't see it.
Yeah.
Really, I don't see any protection.
Tom, I
have. You know, maybe on the previous caller who had the big...
Yeah, hold on, Mark. In fact, that's Sergio Pino. He's trying to get in here. Go ahead, Sergio.
Tom, and be honest with you. Look, first of all, Jose is a great leader, and he's doing a great job representing our industry, and I'm part of the Builders Association of South Florida. The mayor is also a great mayor, doing a good job. And honestly, during the difficult times, he's been great. Now, I will tell you, and Jose spoke about taking the temperature. One of the two individuals who had contacted the virus in my property, in my project, was the guy who taking the temperature, because in order for you to take the temperature, you have to come so close to these people. And so he's one of the ones who tested positive. So we stopped doing that. We're not doing it anymore because we're putting him at risk. Look, if you listen to the people that are the expert, like Dr. Fauci, he's on TV all day long.
Anthony Fauci, the head of the National Institutes of Health. Right?
He said last night on TV, if you sneeze, it travels 25 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And then stays in the air for like 2 hours. And look at all the efforts that we're doing. It's like putting Band-Aids.
We don't even have inspectors out there. The inspectors are home because the county is closed.
That's in Dade County. Yes, they have suspended construction in the city of Miami. But Sergio, to that point, let me just ask Mark, you're an inspector in Palm Beach County, right, Mark?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, construction sites are plastered with signs, warning signs, safety signs. Are there signs at these sites regarding COVID-19 and proper precautions?
Well, most of the sites are smaller projects. We're just putting windows in, doors, fences, things of that nature. I don't see signs. The workers are just there with no protection.
Yeah.
So the other thing I noticed, a lot of the workers are probably uninsured, and a lot of them are, I guess, I don't know how to put it, minority, and they're not familiar with to be able to read the signs in English, and they work.
Yeah. Mark, hold on a second. Jose, go ahead. Quick comment, and then we're going to take a break.
So, Tom, we do have a lot of our members have put up safety signs there. Again, they are enforcing these things. But again, there's like Sergio was saying, that there's people that are, and he was doing his own protocols. And I guess once, if you have and happen to test positive at one of these sites, there's a protocol for cleaning the site. The county had to do it when they had an outbreak on their building department. Sergio had to do when he had, and I think Sergio opened up back his sites. He hasn't closed all his sites. I mean, we're talking about closing the job sites, but my understanding is he went ahead and did a decontamination and opened back up again.
Yeah, that's right, Sergio.
We opened up, and we have a place where we had 220 people working a week ago. We have 40 people working today. And look, it doesn't make any sense for one builder to stop construction. It's had to be everybody, because you know as well as I do that the subcontractors move. No subcontractor is for Century Home Builders or for any other builder.
Yeah.
They work for many other builders. So if they don't have a job in my job site, they're going to go to another job site.
We're going to talk more about this here, fellas, but real quick, Sergio, on those 160 fewer workers you have in the job site, were those your workers or subcontractors?
No, everything is subcontractors.
So they're subcontractors.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Sergio, hold on the line. We want to talk more about this. Jose, you stay on as well. Juan Gonzalez is with the South Florida Builders Association. Sergio Pino runs and founded the Century Home Builders Group. We're talking about the coronavirus and construction sites in South Florida. 800-743-9576 is the phone number. 800-743-WLRN. All ahead.
We're funded by members and by the law firm of Fridman, Fels & Soto, PLLC in Coral Gables. Trial-tested former federal prosecutors focused on government investigations and litigation. Learn more at ffslawfirm.com. Fridman, Fels & Soto, litigation, investigation, solutions.
Monday morning on the Sunshine Economy, the first of the month, and the rent and mortgage are due. Renters, owners, and landlords deal with the new economic realities for real estate because of the coronavirus. I'm Tom Hudson. The program is made possible by Kaufman Rawson. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Earlier, I made a mistake. I identified Dr. Anthony Fauci with the National Institutes of Health as a director. He's the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the National Institutes of Health. I apologize for that error. We're talking about construction sites in South Florida and the coronavirus across South Florida. Building projects are still ongoing, big, multi-million dollar projects that can reshape the skyline, and smaller projects that maybe just are reshaping a room in a home or in a condominium. They have been deemed essential businesses, construction, and in the same category as food suppliers and healthcare facilities. Phone lines are open. Do you work in construction? Has your job changed during this pandemic? Are you seeing construction sites? 800-743-9576. Sharing your experience with us here on the telephone at 800-743-WLRN. Sergio Pino is still with us, president founder at Century Home Builders Group in Miami. Jose Gonzalez is with the South Florida Builders Association, executive vice president for business development at the Florida East Coast Industries Developer Group. Gentlemen, let's get some more phone calls in here. We've got Kat in Miami, who has been very patient, holding on line one. Go ahead, Kat, you're on the radio.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. First of all, I am acquainted with Sergio Pino from Cocoa Plum. Hello? And he's a very noble person. I can tell you personally, he probably doesn't even know who I am because I'm not using my real name, but he's a very noble man, and I appreciate his effort in alerting us. And East Coast Industries is Flagler, and it's all Codina, and I also know all about that. So I'm telling you my story. My story is my husband's undocumented, and he's in construction. And you guys hire a lot of undocumented, uninsured. If Mr. Gonzalez, you want to make a pledge to insure every worker on every job site. If you want to make a pledge, make a pledge. Don't give me this nonsense of 6 feet social distancing. You and I both know that. That is not going to happen.
Kat, thanks for sharing that. Let's have Mr. Gonzalez respond to that. Jose, would you like to respond to Kat's pledge or her request for a pledge?
Well, I will tell you right now, our industry is protecting all the workers there. That's why we're going through all these guidelines that were given by the health experts. So I don't, the pledge she's asking us to do, we were doing already.
Well, I think she's asking for a pledge for health insurance coverage.
Health insurance coverage, these are all, like Sergio said, these are all subcontractors. Each company provides different health care for all of them. So it's not the builder who does it. It's their subcontractors. A lot of these guys have health care. So I don't know what her circumstances are, but I can tell you a lot of subcontractors all provide health care to their employees. A lot of bigger general contractors provide a lot of benefits for their employees as well. So I don't want to speak to something that she's, you know, painting a broad brush with this. And I will tell you, you know, Sergio talked about the sites that he's working at maybe 20-30%. Most sites are working like that right now anyways. The reality is that there are right now sites that are working at a small percentage of what they were before because of the fact that we're practicing the social distancing. We're forcing them to be smaller. Nobody's working at 100% and going at that kind of speed.
There's also a lot of people that are afraid. Jose, they're not showing to work because they are afraid they're going to get it. A lot of people are getting sick in the job sites. Look, I tour my communities every other day. We have eight communities active at this moment. And I tour others. And I will never speak to anyone about another competitor. But I will tell you that in order to keep that social distance that we talked about, you need a police officer for everybody. The workers are there. They don't have the benefit that we have to watch the news to know what's going on. Just today, I called the attention to one of the workers on the job site. They're too close to the other. And I said, you know, there's 8,000 people already in Florida with the virus. They didn't know these things. And you know, I'm not putting down the workers for not knowing, but they spend the whole day at the job. They touch all the people tools. They don't go wash their hands. You need a police officer.
Sergio, Jose, hold on a second. I want to bring in one more phone call from Fort Lauderdale. Edward is described yourself as a superintendent on a construction site. Go ahead, Edward. You're on the radio.
Yeah, at the job sites where I'm at, the GCs over there are very, very good with regards to providing.
GC being the general contractor. Go ahead, Edward.
Exactly. They've been very good to provide soap and provide hand washing stands and everything like that. To the extent they stopped using the buck hoist, they stopped using the buck hoist, which is the elevator on the site.
Okay.
And with regard to social distancing. For us, at least, you know, for my guys and myself on my crews, it's kind of difficult to get close when you're swinging a hammer or using a grinder, using a saw and stuff like that. And I understand that sometimes you do have a two-man crew, doing all kinds of things. But, the guys, they know it's real.
Got it.
They know it's real.
Okay. Edward, I appreciate you sharing that perspective there from that construction site. Jose, go ahead, Jose.
Lennar, who's the largest builder.
Big home builder, right.
Yeah, they have the largest, they're the largest builder in Miami-Dade County. And they have gone ahead and they've created a whole campaign with educational videos, safety officers that are doing it. They're out there enforcing this. They have hand washing stations. They have sanitizing stations. They provide personal protective equipment for their employees. So they're the largest ones employing large. And again, they're not working at 100% either. But that's one of the things. And what the caller said is true. When you're working in certain things, you're swinging a hammer, a guy is not, closer than 6 feet from you.
Yeah, not so when you're swinging a big piece of metal like that.
There's sort of jobs that require a little more proximity, but those people are actually having personal protective equipment and doing this. And look, the reality is that it comes down to the worker, because many families right now, in a household where one of the parents has to stay home with the kids or has lost their job, a lot of them are depending on this industry for a paycheck. And a paycheck is not paying the mortgage or the car payment. It's putting food on the table. I mean, we're in a spot right now where many families, if they miss 1 week, they go without eating.
Jose, let me put that to Sergio Pino, because Sergio, you wanted to stop work.
No, but look. Let's be honest about this. A paycheck, we should not be deciding between a paycheck and somebody's going to die because of this.
Yeah.
If you put it in a balance, forget about the paycheck. Now, people know that there's so many programs that came out with it through SBA, especially
the Small Business Administration.
Program. I mean, they give you 8 weeks, not 1 week, but 8 weeks of salary for your employees. And, you know, let me tell you something. I have 422 homes under construction today. I'm not the largest builder. God bless Lennar, they are. Now, look, everything we're doing and all the things that we're trying to do and putting band-aids in this thing, all we're saying is, look, let's stop construction for 10 working days, and then we're good.
Sergio, I appreciate you repeating that call. Would you pay your Century Home Builder Group employees and subcontractors during that 10-day period?
Totally. Our company's been in business for 25 years. If we cannot afford to pay our employees for 2 years, we better not be in this business. You know, look, 422 homes under construction. I don't know what it costs to be closed for 10 days, but to me, a life is worth more than whatever delay I have on my construction. I, in my heart, believe that this is the right thing to do. I think it's going to come to it anyways. It's going
to
happen.
Are you willing? I know you've tried to do this, but have kind of reversed course a little bit. Are you willing to step forward, Sergio, and do it anyway, even if the industry doesn't follow?
It doesn't serve the purpose.
Okay.
Because the drywall guys are going to go to another job site.
Yeah.
And you know, and I know that there's a difference between Century and large home builders, especially public companies. You know, a shutdown may take a hit on not on the earnings, but on the prices of the shares.
Yep.
And you know, it's a different situation. I don't blame anybody. I don't talk about anybody. But I don't know. I'm not a leader of any organization. I'm a home builder, but I've seen it with my own eyes this week when I tour communities.
Yeah.
Not only mine, and others.
Sergio, we got to leave it there. I'm sorry for interrupting, Sergio. We're tight on time here. We measure twice and cut once, even on time. Sergio Pino is the president and founder of Century Home Builders Group in Miami. Sir, we appreciate your time today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Jose.
And Jose, absolutely. Jose is Jose Gonzalez with the South Florida Builders Association. Thank you, Jose.
Thank you, Tom.
Finally, in the roundup this week, you know, the coronavirus has changed a lot in our daily lives. We've had to shift our routines to protect ourselves and others. But there's a great number of good things happening, too, every day. WLRN asked folks about something that's brought them joy recently. And we've heard back. Marcia from the Florida Keys wrote to us saying that it's inspiring to see her students online and being able to witness the determination and that of their families to continue learning. Russ from Miami Beach told us that he's had some extra time at home to build some plastic models. He said he plans to give them to his grandson, who lives in Birmingham, Alabama. Nigel in West Palm Beach wrote to us that his girlfriend made it into Florida on the last American Airlines flight on March 16th into Miami International Airport from Guyana. He said they then got engaged in a deserted park on the Intercoastal Waterway. If you'd like to share what's making you happy, your moment of joy, send us a text, 305-676-7825. A text to 305-676-7825. We've also launched a coronavirus newsletter. It includes all the latest news to help you stay up to date on the pandemic. You can sign up at WLRN.org/coronavirus. That'll do it for our program this week. It is produced by Alexander Gonzalez. Our engagement producer is Katie Lepre. News Director Terrence Shepard, Alicia Zuckerman, our Editorial Director, the Director of Radio Operations is Peter J. Meritz, and the Director of Radio Programming is Jason Zabka. The show's technical supervisor is Richard Ives. Chris Remington answered the phones. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for calling and listening. The program is made possible by Willie the Bee-Man, Bee Removal Specialist.
As we face school closures, many parents are adapting to at-home learning. To assist during this uncertain time, WLRN, in collaboration with Miami-Dade County Public Schools, is here to help by providing educational programming content for pre-K through 12th grade students with our award-winning PBS programs. Students can view these curriculum-related shows weekdays from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. on WLRN-TV. For more information, go to WLRN.org/at-home-learning.
Science Friday on WLRN is brought to you in part thanks to the generous support of the Philip and Patricia Frost Museum of Science. Learn more at frostscience.org.
This is 91.3 WLRN and HD1 Miami, Fort Lauderdale, 91.5 WKWM and HD1 Marathon, Key West, 90.7 WFLV HD4 West Palm Beach, and 101.9 NPR for the Palm Beaches. Stay with us. Science Friday is next. The time is 2 o'clock.